That's Italian musician and producer Andrea Benigni, known by his stage name Mop Mop, and his band the Mop Mop Combo with Jazz Dancer. It's from his 2008 album, Kiss of Cali. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and very interesting gift we have here from the duopoly. I think it is the best gift ever. The gift of chaos, a rigged election, and massive voter fraud. At least these are the contentions. On the Democratic side, there's nary a whimper from the candidate who's been winning the popular vote but lagging in party delegate votes. Bernie Sanders is the person I'm talking about, and he is playing by party rules, hoping, he says, to win delegate and superdelegate votes from Hillary Clinton at the party's nominating convention that comes in July in Philadelphia. But there's an all-out war in the Republican camp, it seems, with Donald Trump, the party's winningest candidate, railing against a corrupt and crooked system that is denying him, he says, his fair share of delegates. Trump isn't waiting to persuade nominating delegates to switch at the GOP's national convention in Cleveland, also in July. The party's rules, he says, are patently unfair because they are being manipulated to favor the will and choice of the party elite. And so far, the party elite is galvanizing and coalescing around, can you believe it, Ted Cruz. Such is the situation. So we'll talk about that today, because I think the battle over the delegates and the charges of corruption in the party's primary process are one of the best gifts that duopoly can give us. Why? Because it is perhaps the best thing we need right now as a stimulus to grow alternative party systems. And it, by the way, it exposes, I think, to the world that neither of the parties can be trusted to respect the sanctity of the people's vote. There is always another way of doing the people's vote in. Here's what we can do. I just appreciate the situation. I'm laughing because it really, I mean, it isn't funny in that sense. It is funny in the ironic sense that we have both parties mirroring each other in their sheer the corruption we've talked about here, the rigged process that has been passing for the way things are for so long. And this delegate process, once and for all exposed for what it is. It is simply the party doing its business the way it has done its business all these years. And they have made up their own rules. It is apparently exempt from constitutional review. Nobody has really filed any kind of legal papers or legal challenge of the system, which in effect says that the popular vote can be and is being undermined. And it brings into question what I've been talking about. And so it was amusing to me to find out over the weekend that of all people who should agree with that position is Donald Trump agrees with me. I don't know that that's a good thing. But nevertheless, here's what he says.
He keeps winning, winning, winning. And then I see he's got no chance. They always say he has no chance. Why doesn't he have a chance? Because the system is corrupt. And it's worse on the Republican side. Because I'm up millions of votes on Cruz. Millions. I don't mean like I'm up by two votes. I'm up millions and millions of votes. I'm up by hundreds and hundreds of delegates. I go to Louisiana. I win Louisiana. And I say, isn't that beautiful? I love the people. I send them a note. Thank you very much. I love you, Louisiana. Then I find out that I get less delegates than Cruz because of some nonsense going on. No, I'm telling you. And I say this to the RNC, and I say it to the Republican Party. You're going to have a big problem, folks, because there are people that don't like what's going on. You know, they don't like what's going on. We've got a corrupt system. It's not right. We're supposed to be a democracy. We're supposed to be, you vote and the vote means something, all right? You vote and the vote means something.
Well, that's Donald Trump making the case, believe it or not, for Bernie Sanders. He says Bernie Sanders keeps winning and winning and winning, and yet he's losing. And then, of course, he talks about his particular circumstance, that the system is corrupt because he is winning and winning and winning, and yet he's not getting his delegates either. But here is the view from a delegate, at least he thought he was, in Colorado, who found himself basically kicked out of the process. His name is Larry Lindsay. He is a GOP delegate, and he showed up to cast his vote, and here's what he said happened to him.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's been a real long time since I've been this pissed off. I'm here at the state convention in Douglas, well, down in Colorado Springs, Colorado, at the World Center here. And I've spent the last hour in line. Douglas County didn't even have a table for their delegates. They've got some guy standing out there with a stick and sign on it. But I've spent the last hour trying to get my credentials so I can get in and get a vote today. And I guess my precinct captain made good on her threats. My name is no longer on the roster as a delegate. I have been removed and replaced. My vote nullified because I voted for Trump. And so now I'm driving back home. There's nothing else I can do here. I am unbelievably pissed. This petty bunch of little pissants over here, if they think they're going to get away with this, they're sadly mistaken. I'm going to raise holy hell about this to everybody that I can get to listen. I'm sick to death of how dishonest and corrupt these people are in Douglas County for the GOP. I'm ashamed to call myself a Republican. And after this election here, I won't be. I never will be again. I've been a lifelong Republican all of my life. And this corrupt bunch of thieves is not even worth fighting for. I find another party that believes more like I do. I've had it with them. But Jan Morgan, you're not going to get away with this. I'll find somebody who'll listen to me. I'll find some way to hold you accountable for this. Bet on it.
Wow. So what we're seeing is the party revealing itself, the Republican Party revealing itself to this delegate. He shows up to basically participate in the process as a delegate, a party official. And he finds, just because he is a Trump supporter, he finds that his name has been removed and he has been replaced. Okay, now I'm bringing this up because it's not about whether you support Trump or you don't support Trump. I'm talking about here how these political processes are being manipulated, and it ought to outrage everybody. And this is what I've been talking about. This ought to outrage everybody. Where you have a man, he says, he has been a lifelong Republican. And the party that he knew and the party that he supported basically said, you're not with the game this year because you're supporting, as a delegate, as a party official, you're supporting the wrong guy. We got to throw you out. They summarily threw him out of his party, essentially. And he was correct to say, this is corrupt. This is wrong. And any notion that democracy is respected, the integrity of the vote is respected, and he's there to basically represent the constituency that he is attached to, casting his vote for Donald Trump. Now, whether you like Trump or you don't like Trump is immaterial. The question is, should this not constitute a major concern for all America? Not just this one man, but this person being symbolic of what is going on both sides of the aisle. We have an election here that is being rigged in front of our very eyes. I talked about this. You have Bernie Sanders. Trump started out his little clip there with a reference, direct reference to Bernie Sanders. He says, how is it that this guy could be winning all these states? He won 7 out of the last 8 elections. And he's poised to do very, very well on the 19th in New York, when New York has his state of birth, if you will, has its primary, and yet he's not winning. There's something wrong with that. Now, the counter to that, and I've been watching how the media have been covering this, and of course they always have, as their so-called analytical panel, they always have representatives of the different candidates running, which I think is just awful. It's just not the way you should go. You should have independent people. Otherwise, your newscast becomes an extension of somebody's PR machine. You have their public relations representatives right there integrated in the so-called news. But when we are discussing this process, and you get to find out the people aren't really the final say. It is an elaborate process. And now you have the explanations, and the explanations are that, well, this is how it works. This is how it's been run. These are the rules. The party is making up its rules. And as I have said here, okay, the party is making up its rules. Then the party has an obligation, it seems to me, to make those rules known prior to the election. Because a lot of people participating in these primaries and caucuses are under the misguided notion that they are actually electing the candidates. But in fact, they're electing the delegates who elect the candidates. And even so, in the Democratic Party, they take it one step further. There are super delegates. These are the party elite who could countermand everything and throw out the people's vote summarily. Or in the case of Larry Lindsey, that we just heard from, he doesn't have any notice at all that he is no longer a party delegate. They just decided, well, you're out. And why is he out? Because he, this is his contention. I have no way of proving it one way or the other. I could only go by what he said. And I have no reason to believe that he's lying about it. You can hear the sincerity in his outrage. As a lifelong Republican, he shows up to cast his vote as a delegate. And somebody decided he is voting for the wrong person, so he's out. So that brings into question, since it's the party and the party is doing it its way, and these are the party rules, then who is in charge of protecting the integrity of the vote? Because the delegates, it seems to me, are the proxy, if you will. They're the proxies for the popular vote. They're the people who are voting in behalf of all those other people in their districts or precincts who are voting. And they're carrying that message to the Republican and Democratic parties and registering where they are going to be voting. Who are they going to be voting for? And yet we're seeing unfolding before us things that indicate that there's something radically wrong here. But the media telling us, no, there's nothing wrong here. And the parties are telling us there's nothing wrong here. These are the rules. And we make up the rules. So the question comes back to the question I've raised before. Are the parties, therefore, able to countermand a constitutional protection of the vote, the integrity of the vote, one person, one vote? The rules, the constitutional, is constitutional law suspended because the parties are taking care of party business with a public that is not at all educated or very haphazardly educated, incidentally educated, as they get whiff of this thing called the delegate system and whatnot, and they have no idea how these things are working. They have no idea what the process is. And they're exercising their vote with the false assumption that they're participating, you know, in the democratic process. Except the parties have a whole different process that apparently the people at large, and here in the case of this one delegate that we heard from, Mr. Lindsay, that they know nothing of. And we're not hearing that this thing needs to be looked at from a constitutional point of view, or that this constitutes fraud, voter fraud, or that this is a blatant example of widespread corruption and the engineering of an election, an entire election. Because what if this process, I made the point, what if this process yields a candidate that should not, by virtue of a democratic process, that would not have had a lead position had it not been for the manipulating of the type that we're seeing here? In the case of the Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton face-off, Trump made the point. Sanders is winning and winning and winning. He's winning the popular vote. And yet he's behind. Hillary Clinton is all but assured, even now. In fact, when she started the race, she was essentially widely accepted as the nominee. And that was the perception because it reflected the reality of what was going on behind the scenes. That the party had basically decided that this was going to be the case. Hillary will be the nominee. But, you know, we got to have any primaries and we got to go through the ritual to make it look like the people's votes are actually counting for something. But right now she is in the lead. And Bernie Sanders is like, he's climbing Mount Everest backwards here, trying to catch up when he shouldn't be. If this were a democratic, small d, democratic process. But it isn't. It's rigged. And we're not hearing anything from Bernie with the kind of outrage that we're hearing from Trump. Trump is saying right out, it's a corrupt system. It's corrupt. And this shouldn't be the case at all. Bernie Sanders is saying, well, I'm hoping, of course, to run really good races and get the popular vote and so forth, and we'll see how at the convention whether we can persuade those people who already are pledged to Hillary to change their minds. Here's a candidate basically endorsing a corrupt system. And he's supposed to be the guy waging a revolution. But he's not ready to wage this essential revolution having to do with the integrity of the people's votes. I think it is time the people step forward and say to Mr. Sanders, what are you going to do? What are you doing to safeguard our votes? Why are you not objecting to the system? Everybody across the board, they all say, well, they know the rules. Trump is basically having a temper tantrum because even though he's winning, he doesn't have enough delegates. And he will have to go into what they call a contested convention or a brokered convention, which means nobody going into the convention is going to have a majority of the delegates that they would need to clinch the nomination. Now, all of that is the standard explanation. Here's the real explanation. That, too, has been engineered. And it has been engineered just the way Larry Lindsey, the man we just heard from Colorado, just told us. Arbitrary bending of the rules, canceling of the rules, making up new rules, and doing some highly irregular things. And yet, it passes muster. It is not called unconstitutional. There's nobody saying, hey, wait a minute, who is overseeing the parties and their so-called rules and the application of their so-called rules? They have unfettered ability to do whatever they want under the guise that essentially, this is party business. But who is policing the parties? Who's doing that? And why the silence? Oddly enough, look where the objection is coming from Donald Trump. Donald Trump is marketing himself as an independent guy. I have no reason to be beholden to this party. I started out being a Republican, sort of kind of Republican, but now he has declared war on the Republican National Committee and the party itself. He has declared open warfare on this question about the vote. We're not hearing anything from Sanders except, well, we'll see what happens at the convention, and we know what's going to happen at the convention. What's going to happen at the convention to compound this insult is that Bernie Sanders will be turning over to Hillary Clinton the millions of votes that he got. So, this, to me, is the gift that we have. That's the gift. The chaos, the corruption, the open festering sore that we are looking at. The scab has been pulled away so as to remind those of us who are still interested in this thing called politics that there ought to be another way. And that we better get to it real soon of constructing an alternative to this insanity palming itself off as a democratic process. It isn't. And it hasn't been. This is where third parties should emerge. This is where coalitions should be built. This is where there ought to be massive movements of people coming together and parting ways with both these parties. They're no longer, they simply do not feed this idea of a democratic process. They don't give any life to it at all. It's corrupt. It's rigged. I agree with Donald Trump. I hate to even hear myself saying that, but it's true. This is the time. This is the gift they're giving us. Allowing us to see for ourselves just how rigged this process is. Just how futile it is. If you still hold to that ideal that the people's vote should do something, count for something, result the people having some kind of meaningful access to the throttle and brake of government. You have no access at all. And certainly the access that you have is, if it's not desired, they have ways of countermanding it. And they're doing it. And the media are not sounding this alarm at all. They're not critical of this process. And I'm not seeing the legal experts and the great political analysts asking a fundamental question here. Does a constitution stop at the doors of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party? They can make up their own rules? And yet they are allowed to have national elections and public funding of campaigns? Really? Do we not have a problem here? A massive problem, a crisis in democracy here? That somebody needs to give us some kind of enlightenment about? The process is rigged and corrupt. No question about it. No question about it. So, for those of us in our community, our so-called progressive community, left-of-center community, however you want to define it, this is supposed to be a warning, yet another point at which we're being warned to construct alternative systems. This, you cannot look to these systems to affirm your democratic rights at all. It's not interested in it. It doesn't hold to those ideals at all. What are you going to do? What do we do? How do we construct something different? We should have, based on the performance of both the Democratic and Republican parties, we should have a burgeoning movement here, the likes of which have not been seen in decades. All kinds of people and community-centered parties emerging that understand how democracy works and should work, and that could harness the sincere desires of the people, and that can protect them and the integrity of their votes, which is a basic tenet of democracy. Here, too, Donald Trump makes a very strong point. Your vote should count. And what is this overwhelming silence on the fact that in the United States right now we are experiencing a crisis, a major crisis in democracy, and people are telling us it's about the primary elections and the tactics and the strategies and the issues? No, it's none of those things. It is that the system is being hijacked, and both the Republican and Democratic parties are absolutely guilty of it. No question. So, you're going to vote? Are you? That's a question. We'll take this break. And when we come back, we'll talk about Brother Bill right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. Well, you know, we have to do this. We have to hear Brother Bill. Brother Bill Clinton, the co-president with Hillary Clinton for 8 years in the United States, he got into a little tangle with members of the Black Lives Matter movement at a rally in Philadelphia last week, and well, he said some things, and I thought I should share all that he said because it's worth hearing. As you know, Bill Clinton has been on the stump for his co-president Hillary Clinton for some time now, causing in some cases a great deal of difficulty for her, and in other cases, especially when it relates to the black vote, black folks, you know, running around, and because he's an honorary black guy, he plays a saxophone, and he talks that black talk, you know, he understands, he understands. So there he was being very helpful to Hillary in Philadelphia, when some people from the Black Lives Matter movement were there to remind him that there is a very different history to the one that he was presenting as part of his accomplishments while in office, which he correctly said that Hillary also shares. And he correctly said it because she actually was co-president when he was president of the United States. So I thought it was going to be very important for you to hear his entire stump, the entire speech, which we will discuss. So here's Brother Bill in Philadelphia.
In South Carolina, interrupt me, and the cloud started booing, and I said, no, no, let's be quiet and listen to this person. I let him say the same thing twice. And I said, may I answer? He just kept screaming. Then a lady next to him said, I said, wait, listen to her. I let her say the same thing twice. I said, okay, may I answer? Just kept on screaming. Now look, what she's referring to are the increased sentencing provisions of the 1994 crime bill. 90% of the people in prison too long are in state prisons and local jails, more than 90%. But it's also true that there are too many people in the state prisons. I mean, the federal prisons. President Obama's trying to let them out. Here's what happened. Let's just tell the whole story. When I became president, the headlines in the newspapers were full of... Now, wait a minute. I listen to you. You listen to me. Wait. Here's what happened. Vice President Biden, you guys know Vice President Biden, his family comes from Scranton. He was the chairman of the committee that had jurisdiction over this crime bill. I had an assault weapons ban in it. I had money for inner city kids, for out of school activities. We had 110,000 police officers so we could put people on the street, not in these military vehicles, and the police would look like the people they were policing. We did all that. And Biden said, you can't pass this bill, the Republicans will kill it if you don't put more sentencing in. I talked to a lot of African-American groups. They thought Black Lives Mattered. They said, take this bill because our kids are being shot in the street by gangs. We have 13-year-old kids planning their own funerals. She don't want to hear any of that. You know what else she don't want to hear? Because of that bill, we had a 25-year low in crime, a 33 low in the murder rate, year low murder rate. And listen to this. Because of that and the background check law, we had a 46-year low in the deaths of people by gun violence. And who you think those lives were? That mattered. Whose lives were saved? That mattered. Now, that's the problem, you know. And who was the first candidate? And Hillary didn't vote for that bill because she wasn't in the Senate. She was spending her time trying to get health care for poor kids. Who were they? And their lives mattered. But, and her opponent did vote for it. But I don't blame him either. It wasn't. There was a Republican Senate, enough Republicans in the Senate to kill this bill. And nobody wanted it to die. That's what happened. But she was the first candidate, the first one to say, let's get these people who did nonviolent offenses out of prison. And guess what? A lot of Republicans agree. They know they made a mistake. Wait a minute. Now you're screaming. So let's do another one. Whoa. No, wait. I want to deal with them all. Come on. No. Come on. Wait. See these other signs? This is what's the matter. I don't know how you would characterize the gang leaders who got 13-year-old kids hopped up on crack and sent them out onto the street to murder other African-American children. Maybe you thought they were good citizens. She didn't. You are defending the people who kill the lives you say matter. Tell the truth. You are defending the people who caused young people to go out and take guns. There was a 13-year-old girl in Washington, D.C., who was planning her own photos. How would you do it? Now, look at this other one. Look at this. That's not true. Now, let's talk about the other thing. They say the welfare reform bill increased poverty. Then why do we have the largest drop in African-American poverty in history when I was president? The largest in history. What happened was all these Republicans got into the Senate, Supreme Court elected President Bush 5-4. Then all these Republicans took over state legislatures. We left them with enough money to take care of all the poor people who couldn't go to work on welfare. We left them with the money they had before the welfare revolts went down 60%. The Republicans took it away, and they're blaming me. And apparently her, she had nothing to do with it. And the reason is, they know it's true, is they won't hush. When somebody won't hush and listen to you, that ain't democracy. They're afraid of the truth. Don't you be afraid of the truth. Don't you be afraid of the truth. So, if you think it was bad in the 1990s, if you think record increases in income and record low unemployment, record decreases in poverty, and record small businesses forming was bad, you ought to go with them. Otherwise, you better elect Hillary president so we can get this country going again. And I love protesters, except when they won't let you answer. Tell them what you think. A lot of these people. Thank you. It reminds me of when the Republicans tried to blame me for the financial meltdown. You know why they tried to blame me? Because we enforced something called the Community Reinvestment Act, which led to $800 billion being loaned in neighborhoods like this. It said, if you take deposits or loans from anybody, you got to make loans there. So when they caused the crash, by having nobody home at the regulatory agencies. They said if Bill Clinton hadn't made us loan money to all these African-American and Latino and immigrant neighborhoods, we'd be peachy keen. They were wrong, too, just like them. And they don't like to listen either. So, look, all I know is this election's about the future. They're trying to blame her for something she didn't do. So I'll tell you another story about a place where Black Lives Matter, Africa. The other day, I started my day with a picture that was sent to me on my iPad of a little guy running a store, he wasn't very tall, in Tanzania, in Dar es Salaam. And you know what his store said? All it was a little crass. It said, the Hillary Clinton store. Now, why did he say that? Because the first thing she did as Secretary of State was triple the number of people in Africa whose lives we were saving from AIDS by going to all low-cost price drugs. The same thing she wants to do for the American people if we give them a chance. Now, that guy just put up his sign on the street a long way away. You need a president who will tell you the truth, answer the questions, and not be intimidated by people on the far right or the far left screaming things that are not true. You just got to decide if you believe it. I'm just telling you, tell you another time she thought Black Lives Matter. No, wait, just listen. No, listen. Listen, you listen to their screaming, and let me ask you this. I got a call from a friend of mine who's been a civil rights leader for years, decades. Last week he said, did Hillary really get 93% of the African-American vote in Alabama? I said, yes, she did. He said, how is that possible? I said, I'll tell you how. When she got out of law school, instead of going to work for some big law firm, which would have really given this girl something to scream about, she went to work for Marion White Edelman and the Children's Defense Fund. And she went to Alabama, where they were perpetuating school segregation and sticking it to the kids by having private academies taking federal tax breaks and pretending to be legal. Hillary posed as a housewife with a kid who might want to go to school in one of these schools 40 years ago, and she said, just tell me, sir, if my child goes here, will he be in an all-white school, yes or no? And the guy said, absolutely. She had him. She exposed him. They lost their tax credits. All those schools lost their tax credits. She ended the most prominent way of delegation to vote when she was 27 years old because she thought those young black lives mattered. Then she went to South Carolina and filed a report on 13 and 14-year-old kids being put in prison with adults and having their lives ruined, and the Children's Defense Fund changed the juvenile justice practices in South Carolina because she thought those lives mattered. And then, when I was governor of Arkansas, she got a preschool program from Israel that taught parents who couldn't read, write, and count to teach their own kids so they'd start school better. And guess what? Before you knew it, she was dragging me to preschool graduations. Before you knew it, we had it in 26 states. And thousands of young people, maybe them, have better lives together because she thought their lives mattered. You see, I listen to them, and they don't want to listen to me. You will never learn anything when you're talking. So, you got a decision to make, Philadelphia. We were there for you, and she has been there for America, and she would be by far the best president because she has been by far the best change maker. You can trust them. our Congressman John Lewis, the last remaining hero of the civil rights movement, almost murdered twice, arrested 40 times. He said, I'm for her because she's always been there with us. And you know it's true. Now, here's the big issue. It's not just about winning. It's about how many people vote. We need a big turnout. We need you to work. We need you to talk to everybody. We need you to tell them what I said today. She's got the best plans, the best record. She's the best leader. These people who have condemned all these people that endorsed her as members of the political establishment are wrong. They were for her because she has led. Stay with her. She'll never leave you. Thank you, and God bless you.
All righty. So there it was. Brother Bill on the stump for his co-president, Hillary Clinton, in Philadelphia last Thursday. Your thoughts about what you just heard at 888-874-4888. What did you just hear from Bill Clinton as he was encouraging a very strong black turnout for Hillary Clinton because she has always been there? Lord have mercy. 888-874-4888. You know, when you hear the snippets, it's one thing because, of course, the media can't run the full thing, or they don't see that it is important to run the full thing. But when you hear it all together, a particular picture emerges, and it says something. What does it say? What did that short, well, it was about 13 minutes, but what did that speech by Bill Clinton, as he was confronted, what did it say to you? What should we understand by that? I leave it to you. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. People say, well, why do you play these things? Because, you know, it's important. You hear when at several levels what people are saying. You hear it several levels. And despite the whole thing, I mean, he got quite a bit of coverage. This got quite a bit of coverage. And it was all pretty much focused on Bill Clinton and, of course, Hillary Clinton, but mostly on Bill Clinton stumping for his wife. But the thing is, a lot was said there that should, you know, cause you to wonder, what is it? What is it that the media insists on missing? Kwame, what did you hear?
I think I heard a man who's suffering from insanity, and that's why I heard. I mean, this self praise of his wife and their accomplishment. I mean, this whole thing about when he touched on the issue of the him being blamed, you know, for the financial crisis, this whole program about what his wife did with where she borrowed this program from Israel, and why, you know, all this why we should vote for Hillary. I mean, this man is insane, and he's in such arrogance, and he just couldn't take rejection. That black folks ain't black. There's certain black folks, because there are some black folks support, unfortunately, who ain't having it.
What was the most glaring omission here, especially not only from what he said, but what the media might have reported that you might have seen?
I can't really say on that one, be honest with you, because I really didn't follow even though I was aware of this story, I really didn't follow the media story too much. But trying to think of something that was very... One thing that was very catching, though, was his denial of the incarceration of African Americans.
Okay.
The way he tried to put his spin on the whole, and try to tell us what we were suffering from our own people.
It is amazing that the crime bill, which produced the world's largest prison population, he kind of didn't mention that, by the way, but he did say, well, you know, there might have been a little problem with it, but it is largely because of the Republicans. It had nothing to do with him. Thanks so much.
And then he touched the one about the welfare rolls, too.
Yes, but of course he's talking to black people, so you talk about welfare, and you talk about the crime, and you talk about the pathology of the black community. That's basically what he had to say to black people as reasons.
Daniel Patrick Moynihan type of thing.
Thank you, Kwame, for getting us started today. Thanks for your input. Joe from Florida, what did you hear?
How you doing? I'm not going to comment on the specifics of what he said, but overall, it was an orchestrated situation. There's no question in my mind about that was extemporaneous. That was a plant, probably, and for him to rattle off that bit, that couldn't happen. That's my take on it, but that's not really why I called. You made me laugh. I almost fell out of my chair when you said he's one of us. He plays the saxophone. That was really good, Latrice.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's
you
treat.
You even laughed
okay.
at it yourself.
I was being sarcastic, of course.
I know that. But I want to say one last
Well, thank you for calling and contributing today. You know, it's very important when we hear speeches to, of course, appreciate the context of these speeches, but to listen very carefully at how the speaker prefers to approach the audience. And like I said, all the things that Bill Clinton expanded upon and expounded upon were things that typically are addressed when you talk to black voters. Let's talk about the pathology of the black community in an election year where people are concerned about employment, where people are concerned about education, and these are very much on the top of the list of black communities and all communities. You don't talk about these things. People are concerned about your foreign policy in Africa and the Caribbean and in Latin America and Central America. People are concerned about the quality of life. People are concerned with all kinds of things, including police brutality. These are the things that people are concerned about. There is this standard approach when talking to African Americans that, well, it is an embarrassing reference to the standard neoliberal approach. You know, I'll tell you, we're concerned about you, but look, you're killing yourselves. You're shooting each other. And I did all that I could to prevent you from shooting each other and killing each other. And Hillary will too. And she was there with you while you were killing each other and shooting each other. So vote for her. She's been there. She brought a program from Israel that showed people how to read. You know, a little historical research would have revealed that the first thing that the slaves did before even they were freed was to build their own schools with their own money, whatever they had. The universities, many of the black universities today, that's how they were started. Education was such a priority that the number one, the very first petition to Congress was about schools and education. So when you hear these things, it is so offensive on so many levels. But this is par for the course. And this is where we are stuck, and we have been stuck, and especially with the Democratic Party, we've been stuck in this time warp. We can't seem to get out of it. where the issues that matter most are the ones that they ignore. And yet, the trade-off, and he's very clear about it, we will continue to ignore what your issues are, but we will continue to press you into service to deliver your votes, because that's what Hillary needs. Thanks for joining me today. Thanks for being here. And stay tuned. Coming up next, you don't want to miss it. It's one of the best news programs ever, the Global Research News Hour, coming right up right after this program. You could reach me at Lead Stories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.